Emotion is a powerful motivator, but it can also be your greatest enemy. My next swallow felt like I was forcing nails down my throat. I am disciplined. I will be disciplined. I'm done fighting with Holchester off the pitch, and you won't see me behind the wheel of a car during a race ever again, sir. I'd promised Scarlett the same thing, but like Scarlett, Coach didn't look convinced. Are you? He regarded me with naked skepticism. Discipline is a mental exercise, Donovan. Physically, you excel at the game, but mindset is as important as any of the conditioning drills that Greeley is running out there. And right now, your mind is a mess. No, it's true. He cut me off when I opened my mouth in protest. You may not see it, but I know my players, and I've watched you especially closely since you joined my club. Now, I'm no psychologist, but even I can see that something is driving those stupid, impulsive decisions of yours. It's not Holchester, and it's not Dubois. Until you figure out what it is and deal with it, you'll never find the discipline you need to achieve your goals or to work with the team. Cold unease crawled under my skin. Coach's words were both vague and ominous, the worst combination. The doctors and our rehab team say you'll be fully healed and cleared to play in 2 weeks. But you'll be off the pitch longer than that. Coach sighed. I'm benching you until further notice.
What?
I nearly shot out of my chair. Coach, you can't! I stopped when I noticed his tired frown. He didn't want this any more than I did. Benching me indefinitely was a huge gamble. Between the price of my transfer and the fact that I was their lead attacker, my absence would cause chaos. Anytime Blackcastle lost a match, they would blame him for not putting me in. Coach was going to get shredded by the public and the club's executive committee. They hadn't paid millions of pounds for me to sit on the sidelines, but he felt strongly enough about the situation to risk that outcome. I sank back into my chair and tamped down my knee-jerk indignation. He had every right to bench me. He'd given me plenty of warnings regarding my behavior, and I'd ignored him. He would be a terrible coach if he didn't discipline me. Prove to me you can think before acting first, and that you have a handle on your impulsiveness. Once you do that, I'll allow you back on the pitch. He nodded at the door. Now get back to training. Just because you're benched doesn't mean you can slack off. Yes, sir, I said quietly. I walked out, my ears ringing with condemnation.
It's about the pattern. It's about compulsively choosing to do something that leads to self-harm.
Something is driving those stupid, impulsive decisions of yours.
I can't stand by and watch you self-destruct. Do you remember the favour you owe me? Please go.
My head pounded from the tumult of voices swarming my brain. They overlapped and blended together, their collective volume rising to a point where I could no longer hear my steps against the concrete floor or the anxious hammer of my pulse. Scarlet, football, my control over my own bloody life. Everyone and everything I loved was slipping through my fingers. If I didn't get my shit together soon, I'd lose everything I'd worked so hard for. Permanently. Chapter 50. Asher. That weekend, Blackcastle played Tottenham and did just fine without me. They squeaked out a miraculous goal in the last minute, but a win was a win, and as happy as I was for them, for us, I couldn't stop something unpleasant from slithering through my veins. It was like my absence didn't mean anything, like I didn't matter. The dark cloud that had followed me since the crash grew heavier, and I begged off celebrating with the team afterward. It wasn't like I'd contributed to their victory. Maybe if Teddy were alive, or I had another best friend, I'd have an outlet to vent the sickly emotions coiling inside me. Since I didn't, I was forced to drown in them alone.
I can't believe you're pulling a Noah on us,
Adil said when I told him I was going home. Noah rarely came out with us after a match. However, even the ever-persistent Adil didn't push me to join their revelry. The team had been walking on eggshells around me since the crash and my breakup with Scarlett. I hadn't confirmed it myself, but they must have noticed how I clammed up when she came up in conversation and grilled Vincent about it instead. It was mortifying. I hated being the object of pity. But at least they had my back. No one gave me shit about what happened with Bachi. Many of them had been present for the race, and they'd wanted to make him eat his words as much as I had.
Anyway, enjoy your night off. I'll see you on Monday.
Adil slapped a hand on my shoulder. Neither of us mentioned that I didn't have nights on anymore since Coach benched me.
Take it easy, Donovan.
I forced a smile and nodded as the team piled into their cars for a night at the Angry Boar. Noah had gone home and Vincent was noticeably absent. Maybe he was already at the pub. We hadn't talked much the past few weeks, and I suspected he was avoiding me given my broken relationship with Scarlett. It was for the best. I couldn't look at him without thinking about her, and I couldn't think about her without feeling like someone had jammed a sword through my gut. I drove straight home from the stadium and cut a direct path to the kitchen. Thankfully, my security team had succeeded in scaring off the paps that used to lurk around my house, so I didn't have to worry about them on top of everything else. Yes, I was wallowing. No, I didn't give a shit. I grabbed a glass bottle of Coke from the fridge and popped the cap off. Normally, I didn't indulge in much alcohol or soda during the season, but since I was benched for the foreseeable future, I allowed myself a cheat drink, or two, or three. I leaned against the counter and took a swig, my eyes sweeping dispassionately across the giant kitchen until the copper gleam of cookware caught my eye and a flood of memories assaulted me.
I thought you were an intruder.
Why would you think that?
I came downstairs for a snack and saw the light from the kitchen. I didn't realize.
That I might have gotten the same idea. My mouth curved at the recollection of Scarlett wielding a frying pan like a weapon, before reality intruded and flattened it again. That night seemed like a lifetime ago. She might never step foot inside my house, much less my kitchen again. The taste of the soda staled on my tongue, but I finished the rest of the bottle and forced myself not to call her like a pathetic ex desperate for a second chance, which I was, but I had enough dignity left not to broadcast it so loudly. I did not, however, have enough dignity to stay away entirely. I visited her favorite cafe every weekend, hoping for a glimpse of her, but she was never there. She'd stopped going weeks ago because of the paps, but I thought, it doesn't matter what you think. She doesn't want anything to do with you until you figure your shit out. My stomach knotted itself into a ball of frustration. I'd promised her and Coach I wouldn't race again, but how could I prove it? It was impossible to prove a negative. Plus, I still didn't know what Coach meant when he said something was driving my impulsiveness. If it wasn't my pride or hot-headedness, as he called it, what the hell was it? My phone rang. My heart leapt, and for a wild, hopeful moment, I thought it might be her. Then I registered the ringtone, and my heart plummeted again. Not her. A quick glance at the screen revealed it was my father. I promptly sent the call to voicemail. If I was avoiding him before, I was hell-bent on not talking to him now that the news of my indefinite suspension had leaked. As predicted, Black Castle fans were in an uproar, though today's victory had soothed their anger somewhat. That wouldn't matter to my father. In fact, it probably made him more angry. I was supposed to be indispensable, and if I wasn't, then I was clearly doing something wrong. I reached for a second bottle when the phone rang again, and I sent it to voicemail, again. If it was an emergency, he would have left a message after his first call. He hadn't, so I assumed he simply wanted to yell at me and make me feel like shit. What else was new? Between my suspension, the car crash, and the media circus around my relationship with Scarlett, he had plenty to vent about. But I'd taken enough verbal beatings this month, and I wasn't interested in serving as his punching bag tonight. I took my drink into the living room. The house felt unbearably cold and lonely these days, but it was my only feasible sanctuary. I couldn't go out in public without risking my privacy. I couldn't go to my parents' house without facing, well, my parents. And I didn't have the privilege of staying at Scarlett's flat anymore. Remorse swelled in my throat. I was surrounded by the best luxuries money could buy, but I would give it all up for the chance to see her again.
I care about you. I care about you so much, and that's why I can't be with you.
Perhaps I was delusional, but I could have sworn she was about to use another word before she settled on care about. A word with four letters that began with the letter L. I wasn't sure whether that would have made things better or worse, though I couldn't imagine feeling worse than I did at that moment. My phone rang again, and again, and again. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I picked up, but I didn't even get the chance to speak before my father's gruff voice filled the line.
About time you picked up, he snapped. Open your gates.
I shot up straight.
What? I said open your bloody gates.
His voice deepened into an irritated grumble.
The taxi driver is getting impatient, and so am I.
I checked my home security app, which allowed me to surveil various sections of the estate from my phone. Sure enough, a black cab idled outside the gates. I could just make out my father's scowl through the back window.
Fuck!
My pulse sputtered. My father showing up in London unannounced wasn't on my bingo card for the night. Since he was here, I had no choice but to let him in. I opened the gates and waited for him by the front door. Every inch of my body, from my skin to my bones, was saturated with dread. The cab dropped him off right in front of the door and sped off. My father walked toward me, his cane gleaming under the house lights. It had been months since his heart attack, but according to my mother, he got winded easily, so his doctor had suggested the regular use of a walking aid.
Dad,
I greeted him stiffly.
Asher.
He looked a little haggard, but his stare was as piercing as ever. We didn't exchange another word as I led him to the living room. Tension sprouted between us like weeds through cracks in the pavement. It tangled around our ankles, making me feel like a prisoner in my own home. This was my father's first time visiting my house in London. He didn't look particularly impressed, even though the mansion was about 50 times bigger and more expensive than my childhood home. In fact, he looked almost annoyed by the display of wealth. When we reached the living room, we settled on separate sofas, as far away from each other as possible.
Where's Mum?
I asked, breaking the silence. He wouldn't leave Holchester without her.
She's at the hotel. She wanted to come, but I told her I wanted to talk to you alone first.
He sounded deceptively calm.
I didn't want her to be here when I asked you what the bloody hell you're doing!
I went rigid at the sudden but not unexpected escalation in his temper. Honestly, I was surprised it had taken him this long to march to my house and read me the riot act. He glared at me, flaying me alive with his anger. I glared back, my muscles taut. I'll admit, I'd made my fair share of mistakes this year, but I wasn't a kid anymore. I wasn't going to let him ambush me in my own fucking house. I'm not in the mood, Dad, I said, striving for calm. If you came to yell at me for the crash or getting suspended, you're out of luck. I already got the talk from Coach. I don't need it from you, too. His face reddened further.
You think I came all this way because you got benched? Boy, if I wanted to yell at you about that, I could have called you on the phone and saved myself the train and hotel money. And no, I don't give a shit that you've been avoiding my calls. I would have found a way.
His eyes flashed.
I'm here because I want you to look me in the fucking eye and tell me why you're sitting on your ass at home when you should be proving to those vultures out there.
He thrust a finger toward the entryway.
That you're Asher fucking Donovan for a reason. Have you seen what they're saying about you? Are you going to take it lying down?
My jaw clenched. The tabloids were relentless in their coverage. They were dragging Coach through the mud for suspending me, but they were howling at me too for putting myself in a position to be benched. It was a lose-lose situation for everyone except fucking Butchie, who'd gotten off scot-free after the investigation into what happened the night of the crash yielded no actionable results.
How?
I snapped, my temper igniting.
The tabloids are uncontrollable, and Coach benched me because he thinks something is driving my impulsiveness, whatever the hell that means. I assume he wants me to figure out why I feel compelled to race, even though I said I wouldn't do it again. I have no desire. But how am I supposed to prove I'm not going to do something?
by showing him why he signed you in the first place.
My father stamped his cane against the floor.
Have I taught you nothing? When life throws you obstacles, you either obliterate them or you find a way around them. You don't bloody wait for the universe to haul them out of the way for you. You think those parasite paps sit around waiting for a photo to fall into their laps? I don't fucking think so. You can't prove you're not going to do something, but you can bloody well do more than drown in self-pity.
My hands fisted. You wasn't wrong. I was drowning in self-pity. However, I couldn't figure out how to pull myself out of the deep end without exposing myself to worse elements, like whatever was causing me to engage in the self-destructive behavior Scarlet accused me of. But I wasn't going to admit any of that to my father. I was wound tight from weeks of pent-up emotion, and I was spoiling for a fight.
You should be happy,
I said.
You don't have to watch your son play against instead of for Holchester anymore. Isn't that what you wanted?
My father's nostrils flared.
What I wanted? You think I want a son who gets sidelined and fucking lambasted by the press because he can't keep his emotions under control? No, you want one who wins championships, but only if it's for your team.
I shot back.
Tell me. Have you attended a single one of my matches since I transferred to Blackcastle? Have you ever called just to talk to me like I was your son instead of using it as an opportunity to criticise everything I did on the pitch? For fuck's sake, what do you want me to do?
He shouted.
Coddle you like you're a fucking baby. You can't improve if all I do is pat you on the head and say, good job, every time you kick the bloody ball. I'm not asking you to coddle me. I'm asking you to act like my father and not my bloody coach.
The emotions exploded past the dam I'd spent years constructing and poured through my mouth, flooding the room with a lifetime's worth of resentment. It wasn't just the past month, and it wasn't just my father. It was everything. Scarlet, Coach, Teddy, Vincent, my critics and my fans, my triumphs and my mistakes. Sometimes the weight of it all was so great I couldn't breathe. My home was supposed to be my haven, and I didn't even have that.
I have a coach already. I don't need a second one,
I said, unable to keep the furious tremor out of my voice.
What I need is a family, and you took that from me.
My father and I glared at each other, our chests heaving from the force of our anger. We tiptoed around this conversation our entire lives. Our argument in the hospital had revealed a slice of it, but this had been decades in the making.
You think I took your idea of a family from you?
My father spit out.
I'm not trying to be your fucking coach. I'm trying to make you into what you've always wanted to be. The greatest footballer in the world. What kind of father would I be if I didn't push you to your full potential? One who cares about his son more than his team.
We'd circled back to square one, but we'd never really left.
If you were trying to help me achieve my goals, you would have kept the same energy after I transferred to Blackcastle. But you didn't, did you? You could only focus on how I betrayed you and Holchester by switching teams. You couldn't even congratulate me when we won a match. Not once.
He stared at me, his hand clenched tight around his cane. I expected him to bluster and yell some more, but to my surprise, he seemed to deflate before my eyes. The anger drained from his face and body, making him look smaller and older than he had minutes ago.
I'm not saying I act perfectly all the time,
he growled.
Was I upset when you transferred to Blackcastle without telling me first? Of course. Holchester wasn't my team, it was our team. When you were a kid, they were all you talked about. We went to every match together. We strategized how to get you a spot in the club. I thought you loved them.
In the face of his unexpected calm, my anger leaked out too, leaving a hollow cave in my gut. I did. But we can't stay in the same place forever, even if we love it. We have to grow. I swallowed. I didn't tell you beforehand because I was afraid you'd somehow convince me to stay before the paperwork went through. I needed to leave Holchester to become my own person.
I couldn't do that with you in my ear all the time. I couldn't make a single move or celebrate a single win without you disparaging me. I can take criticism, but not if it's the only thing I hear. My father's mouth formed a thin slash across his face. Your mother always said I was too harsh on you about football. And maybe I was. But I didn't push you to win for me. I did it for you. Bullshit. We may be having a civil conversation, but I wasn't stupid. Think what you want, but it's true, he snapped. You need that title, son. You need the validation. You were so afraid of proving your critics right that it would have killed you to fail, especially after Teddy died. So I didn't let you. And look at you now. He nodded at the trophies and medals and expensive gadgets surrounding us. Do you think you would have made it this far if I hadn't pushed you from the start? I didn't believe him. I didn't want to believe him. I'd spent so long constructing my narrative for our relationship that to alter any piece of it would mean altering my worldview, and that was unthinkable. But I heard the whisper of truth in his words, and even if it wasn't the whole truth, it was more than I'd expected. My father sighed, his face softening again. You were inconsolable after Teddy died, he said. I flinched. We hadn't talked about Teddy since I was a teenager, and I preferred it that way. Some memories were better left in the past. You blamed yourself for what happened to him. The night after his funeral, you took my car and stayed out all night. Your mother and I were frantic with worry. But you finally came home at 4 in the morning, smelling like ale and cigarettes. You couldn't imagine. His voice trailed off. It was like you had a death wish, and you were punishing yourself for surviving when he didn't. My breath stuttered beneath the blow of my surprise. I don't remember that. Honestly, the days and weeks after Teddy's death were a blur. I either blacked out or repressed them. But my father's words dredged up a vague recollection of cheap beer and the rev of the engine as I floored it through dark, empty streets. I don't suppose you would, but it's not something a parent forgets. My father's jaw ticked. We grounded you, yelled at you, lectured you. But I could tell the only thing that kept you going during that time was football. You were doubly determined to succeed for yourself and for Teddy. So I focused on that. I pushed everything out of the way and made it the only thing you thought about. An overwhelming pressure spread from the base of my skull to my temples. I couldn't pass truth from fiction anymore, and I suspected he was making his motives sound more pure than they were. However, he was right about one thing. Teddy's death and the role I played in it had sent me into a dark spiral. Football saved me, but something is driving those stupid, impulsive decisions of yours. It was like you had a death wish, and you were punishing yourself for surviving when he didn't. My heart stopped for a beat. No, it couldn't be that simple, could it? You can believe me or not. It doesn't matter. What's past is past, my father said, dragging my attention back to me. But I came here to remind you of that boy who would have done anything to sit where you're sitting right now. Do you think teenage you would have come this far only to squander his dreams on a few stupid bloody mistakes? He would have fought to play again. He stood, leaning heavily on his cane as he did so. I can't make you do anything you don't want to do, though Lord knows I have tried. But think about what I've said tonight. Think about what you're tossing away if you don't pull your head out of your arse soon. He stumped toward the door. I'll see myself out. It's late, and if I don't get back to the hotel soon, your mother will have my hide. I almost let him leave without further comment, but there was one more unresolved issue hanging over us. I stopped him just before he reached the doorway. You never answered my question from the hospital. Your team or your son? I needed to hear him say it.
My father looked back at me, his face unreadable. The team will always be there, he said. But I only have one son. Then he left, and I was alone in the silence once again. Chapter 51. Asher. My father's words echoed in my head long after he left, especially what he said about Teddy and my death wish. Was that really the reason behind my compulsion to race? It seemed absurd. I enjoyed racing, and it didn't make sense for his death to be the reason behind my self-destructive behavior. It had driven me to succeed, not to sabotage myself. But the thrill I got from racing was the thrill of cheating death, so maybe my headache intensified. It was too late for this. I needed sleep first, and I could figure out what to do with the revelations from my father's surprise intervention tomorrow. Unfortunately, the night had other plans for me when, less than an hour after he left, someone else showed up at my gates. Disbelief cut through me when I saw who it was. You've got to be kidding me. I was tempted to leave him outside, but I caved and opened the gates again. What was one more visitor? Hell, maybe I should ask the London Philharmonic to come over for a concert and then set up sleeping bags for all the paps to camp out in my living room. Maybe the universe was doing me a favor by trying to distract me from thoughts of Scarlet. Or maybe it was trying to punish me by making me deal with my father and the person who reminded me most of her within the span of 1 hour. I opened the front door to Vincent's scowling face. A bolt of irritation darted through me. He showed up at my house uninvited and had the nerve to look annoyed. Typical Vincent. What are you doing here? I asked. Did someone put out a broadcast telling London I'm having an open house tonight or something? Given the way my week was going, I wouldn't be surprised. We need to talk. He shoved past me into the foyer. He was still wearing his kit from that afternoon's match, which didn't improve my mood. Not only did he remind me of his sister, but he reminded me of my suspension. At that moment, he was the symbol of everything I'd lost, and I almost decked him for it. I didn't. One, that wouldn't solve my problems, it would compound them. Two, my issues weren't his fault, though I wish they were. It was easier to blame others for my misfortunes than myself. I don't want to talk. Nevertheless, I slammed the door closed, in case there was a pap lurking out there with a long-range night lens or whatever they used to spy on their unsuspecting victims. I trusted my security team, but one could never be too careful. If this is about your sister... I couldn't bring myself to say Scarlet's name. It hurt too much. It's not. I'm not here as Scarlet's brother. I flinched even as Vincent continued without so much as a, hello, it's lovely to see you. I'm here as your captain. And I'm telling you to get your shit together. Oh, for fuck's sake. Was it kick Asher while he's down day and no one told me? Why was everyone barging into my bloody house to yell at me? I already... You see those? He pointed at the medals displayed inside a glass case in the hall. If you want another one, you need to get your head out of your ass. So you're suspended and your girlfriend broke up with you. Boo fucking who? My shoulders stiffened. You said this wasn't about Scott. About her. It's not. It's about the way you're acting because of her. Vincent snapped. You want to be the greatest footballer in the world, yet you can't hold it together after one breakup. Let's say you get back together. What happens if you get into a fight before a match? What happens if she breaks up with you again before the World Cup? You've been moping like a teenager for a week. And it's time you got over it. He barreled over my response. Now I'm going to say this once, and if you tell anyone, I'll fucking deny it. But we need you back on the pitch. Team morale is down, and we can't keep up our streak without you. We barely won against Tottenham. Most importantly, you need to get your shit together and figure out a way to win Scarlet back. For some reason I can't fathom, she still has feelings for you. And frankly, I'm sick of seeing her mope around, too. I stared at him, stunned into silence for the second time that night. I couldn't believe Vincent Dubois, of all people, was giving me a pep talk. A harsh and annoying one, but a pep talk nonetheless.
Either he'd conspired with my father on tonight's double attack, or the universe had determined I needed that much of a kick in the ass to get my shit together. I suspected it was the latter. The shock of the night's events cleared some of the days I'd been walking around in for the past 2 weeks. It pained me greatly to admit it, but my father and Vincent were both right. I prided myself on my drive and determination, but I displayed neither since Scarlett ran out of my hospital room the night of the crash. Why was I sitting around waiting for inspiration to strike instead of fighting for her and for my spot back on the pitch? I kept thinking it was impossible to prove a negative, but was it really? Even if it was, I'd achieved the impossible before. I could do it again. For Scarlett, I could do anything. Clarity dissolved the rest of my haze, allowing Vincent's words to fully sink in. "She's moping around." He gave me an exasperated look.
"Out of everything," I said, "that was your takeaway. And yes, she is unfortunately moping."
My heart skipped a beat. I hated the thought of Scarlett being sad, but moping was good. Moping meant she hadn't moved on. Our issue wasn't a lack of feelings for each other, but Vincent's confirmation was the fuel I needed.
"You know, you could have saved half your speech," I told him. "My father was just here. He also told me to get off my arse and fight. So you're a little late with that."
Vincent frowned.
"Seriously, I have more to say. I rehearsed on the ride here."
"Save it. I got the message."
"Oh, well, that's good then."
He looked uncertain now that his original plan had been thwarted.
"So, what are you going to do about it?"
My mind spun as it formed and discarded dozens of strategies. I had to prove to Scarlett that I wasn't the same reckless hothead who'd raced Bocce that night. In order to do that, I needed to take concrete action, do something that would highlight how serious I was about changing. What can I? My heart stopped for a second before it kicked into double time. I got it.
"I have a plan," I said in response to Vincent's question. "But I need the team's help."
The next afternoon, the entire Black Castle Football Club piled into my house for an unofficial team meeting. They bitched and moaned about the last-minute summons, the long drive and the imposition on their day off, but every single member showed up. An embarrassing twinge of emotion scoured my throat as I surveyed the crowded living room. I would never say it aloud because they'd give me never-ending shit about it, but the fact they were giving up part of their Sunday for me when I hadn't given them any details about this meeting's topic meant a hell of a lot. One of the things I loved most about football was the brotherhood. I'd lost that after I left Holchester, but I was tentatively hopeful that I'd found it again.
"So what's this mystery meeting about?"
Samson asked, stretching his arms and legs with a yawn.
"It better be something good. I'm missing a Sunday roast for this. Are we finally starting our book club?"
Adil straightened, his eyes gleaming with excitement.
"Wilma Pebbles has a new book coming out soon. It should be our featured read."
Ever since he read that Triceratops book, he'd been obsessed with Wilma Pebbles. The rest of the team laughed and jeered, though several members looked intrigued. Stevens tossed a throw pillow at him. Adil easily caught it.
"Don't forget you all agreed to join the book club," he reminded them. "I'm adding everyone to the group chat once I've sorted out the logistics."
"You mean you haven't sorted them out yet?"
Gallagher snorted.
"What kind of club admin are you?"
"The kind who'll put you on cleanup duty if you don't show me more respect."
"Yeah, I'd like to see you enforce that rule. Hey, watch the air!"
Gallagher protested when Adil threw the pillow at him. Beside me, Vincent rubbed his temple and shook his head. This was why I didn't want to be team captain. Corralling a group of footballers was harder than herding a litter of hyperactive puppies.
"This is not a book club meeting," he said. "This is a strategy meeting. It has to do with our newest team member."
The other players quieted, their eyes roving between us with open curiosity. They were still getting used to Vincent and me working together instead of arguing, but they were fully on board with the new dynamic. Last season's tension hadn't been fun for anyone.
"Did you two finally kiss and make up?"
Elliot, a midfielder, called from his seat next to the fireplace.
"Are our parents not divorced anymore?"
Laughter erupted around the room.
"Excuse me,"
Vincent looked insulted.
I've been your captain for years. He only transferred in this year.
He jerked his thumb at me.
We are not on the same level. There's only one parent here, and it's me.
Sure, I said. You can be the annoying parent. I'll be the fun older brother. He glared at me, but the expression lacked heat.
Are you going to continue taking the piss, or are you going to explain to everyone why they're here?
Right. As much as I enjoyed humbling his ego, we had more important matters to discuss. I faced the team again.
First, before we get to the reason why we're all here, I want to apologize, I said.
The sentiment had been weighing on me for a while, and I needed to get it off my chest.
I know things have been difficult for various reasons since I joined the club. Some of it is due to external circumstances, but some of it is because of me. Because of my temper, my recklessness.
Your huge ego,
Vincent said.
My pride, I said, ignoring him. All of these things have contributed to a tumultuous start to the season. I dragged you guys into my fight with Holchester when I shouldn't have, and now we're all paying for it.
I looked around the room at everyone's somber faces. For once, they weren't cracking jokes or goofing off. We had a rocky start, but we'd been through a lot together. I was grateful to have them by my side, and I wasn't going to let them down again.
However, that's going to change because I'm committed to Black Castle, and I'm sure as hell committed to making sure we bring home the trophy at the end of the season.
Loud cheers greeted my words. I waited until they died down before I continued.
I'll convince Coach to put me back in the game. When he does, know that I'll be fighting for all of us on the pitch. This isn't about me, it's about the team. And together, we're going to kick the other team's arses!
Another raucous round of cheers erupted.
Hear, hear! Fuck Holchester! Black Castle for the fucking win!
Elliot pounded on the table for emphasis.
All right, settle down.
Vincent called like the buzzkill he is, but he was smiling.
We'll have plenty of time to talk football later. Let's get down to business.
He gave me a pointed look. The guys quieted, clearly curious about where this was going. I paused to collect my thought before speaking again.
As some of you may know, Scarlett and I recently broke up. Yeah, I heard. You and Dubois' sister.
Stevens clucked his tongue.
Shit luck, man. She was a hot...
He cut off abruptly when Vincent and I both pinned him with dark glares.
I mean, she seems like a lovely woman. I'm sorry. Please continue.
I let his impertinence slide, this time.
As I was saying, Scarlett and I broke up, but I've gathered you here because I would like to request your help with the situation.
The team exchanged puzzled glances.
I don't understand, Samson said. How can we help? And why do we need to meet in person for it?
Gallagher yawned.
This could have been an email. No, it couldn't, Vincent said. You'll see when Asher explains step number one.
Gallagher frowned.
Step number one of what?
I smiled a genuine smile for the first time in 2 weeks.
Of our latest playbook, Win Scarlet Back.
Chapter 52. Scarlet. Can I ask you a question? Emma lingered after class again, her face stamped with nerves. It's not about the student showcase, not exactly. Of course. I turned off the music and faced her. Some instructors preferred using a live pianist for their lessons, but I liked the freedom to pause and replay without relying on another person to pick up on my cues. What is it? Emma shifted her weight from foot to foot. I waited patiently, my curiosity pricking its ears up at her long silence. She was usually more direct. How did you deal with the pressure of performing? She finally asked, her cheeks reddening. I mean, knowing that all eyes will be on you and that people will catch any mistake you make on stage. Did it get inside your head? Make you not want the role anymore. Sympathy swam in my chest. Is this about the Nutcracker? She hesitated for a moment before she nodded, her expression miserable. I know it's a school showcase and not like a performance for the king or anything, but it's the biggest role I've had yet. I don't want to mess it up. I know I can do it, but the closer we get to opening night, the more I'm dreading it. There are all these voices in my head telling me I'm not good enough to do it justice, and I can't get them out. Emma's chin wobbled. What if they're still there on opening night and mess up my performance? All my friends and family will be there. I don't want to make a muck of things. The sympathy deepened and mixed with an iota of shame. She sounded so young and uncertain that it cast my previous deeply buried feelings of envy toward her in an even uglier light. I'd had my reasons for feeling the way I had. But I was an adult and she was a teenager. An extremely talented one, but a teenager nonetheless. I'd been in her shoes once, and I understood exactly where she was coming from. It wasn't easy, I admitted in response to her question. There were shows where I was so nervous I wanted to throw up backstage. I don't think that ever truly goes away. Even the greatest dancers get nervous before a big performance sometimes. It's normal. So don't feel like you're not good enough because you have those feelings. In fact, imposter syndrome is often a sign of greatness. Emma frowned.
How?
It's proof you're setting high standards for yourself and that you're not satisfied with being simply good enough, I said. If we think we're perfect and there's nothing we can improve on, we'll never grow. If there's no growth, we stagnate. And greatness doesn't come from stagnation. It comes from progress. The words were meant for Emma, but saying them aloud struck a chord deep inside me. I'd lived in a form of stasis since my accident. Asher had shaken it up and forced me outside my comfort zone. But there was still a part of me that resisted it because I didn't want to grow. The status quo was stagnation, but it was also predictable, safe. And that part of me was clinging to the spindly branches of a long-dead tree instead of embracing the seeds of a new beginning. It was a hard truth and not one I'd expected to confront on an otherwise ordinary Wednesday afternoon. But it was often the ordinary days that surprised us most. I took a deep breath and pushed my realization to the side for future reflection. Now wasn't the time to get in my own head. God knew I'd done that enough the past few weeks. As for the performance aspect, you can only do your best, I said in response to the second part of Emma's question. I can't promise that everything will be perfect. No one can guarantee that. But I've seen you perform, and I know how hard you work in class. You are one of my best students, and I have full faith that you'll do the Sugar Plum Fairy justice. A tiny smile peeked past her nerves. Thank you. You're welcome, I returned her smile. If it makes you feel better, I've found that even when the mind is anxious, the body remembers. The minute I got on stage, my worries melted away because I let them. I didn't try to hold on to the fear. I just let go and allowed the muscle memory to take over. That makes sense. Emma blew out a sigh. She didn't seem fully convinced, but she looked less anxious than she had at the start of our conversation. I've done it before, but the stakes haven't been this high, you know? I know. They'll keep getting higher, but your experience and resilience will grow alongside them. Growth, not stagnation. Exactly. Thank you, Miss Dubois. She shifted her weight again, looking embarrassed. I'm sorry I keep bothering you after class, but this was really helpful, truly. I'm glad I'm not alone in feeling those things. Trust me, you're never alone, and you aren't bothering me. I meant it. I'd been in her shoes, and I understood that pressure. I'm always here if you want to talk, whether it's about the performance or business aspect of ballet. Emma beamed her thanks, her face positively glowing. After she left, I cleaned up the studio, my mind scattered across a dozen different topics. We were less than 2 months away from both the student and staff showcases. I hadn't joined the latter expecting it to affect my views of the former, but it had. Sometime between getting my understudy role and my conversation with Emma today, my jealousy toward her star turn in the Nutcracker had gradually faded. Maybe it was because my own rehearsals reminded me of how physically and mentally taxing the lead role could be. Or maybe it was because I finally had an outlet for the restlessness that had plagued me since my accident. Whatever it was liberating to be free from those particular ugly feelings. It helped that practice had gone smoothly since my hospitalization. I took care of myself the best I could, both at home and at work. Tamara and I also collaborated on a modified rehearsal process that included time limits, frequent breaks, and a more moderate pace. Thankfully, the rest of the staff were fully on board, and I hadn't had any major flare-ups since the modifications were made. Looking back, I was embarrassed that I'd pushed myself to the point where I had to go to the hospital. My desire for perfection and the unrealistic standard I held myself to nearly destroyed me. I'd been too reckless with my body, and I froze as the words reverberated through my head. Too reckless. My heart twisted. I'd done such a good job of not thinking about Asher today. Since I woke up that morning, he'd only crossed my mind 5 times, which was leagues better than the days when he consumed my thoughts entirely from dawn until dusk. However, the echo of my earlier self-reflection yanked him back to the forefront of my mind. The sight of him standing in the studio doorway, the torment in his voice when I broke up with him, the sound of his footsteps disappearing into the distance. The memories tugged on the knot in my chest, yanking it tighter. Too reckless. I'd accused Asher of being too reckless and endangering himself, but hadn't I done the same when I refused to listen to my body's demands? Granted, my situation was less likely to culminate in an immediate fiery death, but the principle was the same. Unease filtered through my veins. Was I being a hypocrite and punishing him for something that I myself was guilty of? It's not really the same, a pragmatic voice in my head reasoned. You didn't make any promises to him regarding dance. You don't have a history of endangering yourself or others. You pushed yourself too hard, that's all. Maybe the situations aren't the same, but the principle is, another voice countered. Oh, shut up. You shut up. My head pounded from the internal squabble, raging inside me. Hearing voices was a bad sign, and hearing them bicker was even worse. I really needed to call my old therapist again. I'd already been contemplating it after my hospitalization, but the past few weeks had cinched the decision for me. I thought I'd gotten to a good place after years of weekly sessions with her, but obviously I still had work to do, for both my professional life and personal life. 2 weeks had passed since my breakup with Asher. I thought the bruising ache of his absence would fade, but it only strengthened by the day. I couldn't turn on the TV or pass by a newsstand without seeing photos of his face plastered everywhere. I couldn't even walk through my flat without seeing his face or hearing his laugh. In the short time I'd known him, he'd ingrained himself into my life so thoroughly that I couldn't imagine living it without him. Trying to do so had been difficult. And my new concerns about whether I'd unfairly set him up on a pedestal even I couldn't reach didn't make it easier. I finished wiping down the bar and tossed the used wipes into the rubbish bin. Did it matter if I was being hypocritical? That didn't change the reality of our situation. It wouldn't make Asher any less self-destructive or susceptible to danger. Unless he... Scarlet? Karina poked her head into the studio, interrupting my rambling thoughts. Her face was flushed and her eyes glittered with excitement. You need to get downstairs right now. Why, is it the Paps again? They hadn't caught wind of my breakup with Asher yet, but it was only a matter of time. Karina shook her head, looking almost awed. You have to see it for yourself. Chapter 53 Scarlet. I saw them on the security cameras, Karina said breathlessly as we exited the building. I had to tell you. Saw who? My question trailed off when we reached the car park. I stopped, inhaled, and stared. Logically, I understood what my eyes were seeing, but my brain couldn't fully process the spectacle. Because staring back at me, their faces stamped with nearly identical grins, was the entire Black Castle Football Club. Every single one of them stood next to a different sports car like they were salesmen at a luxury auto show. Well, almost every one of them. My heart stopped when the two players in the middle parted, revealing a familiar head of dark hair and emerald eyes. How What? My brain sputtered, at a loss for words as Asher walked past his teammates and toward me. His mouth curved into a small smile.
Hi, darling.
It was a simple greeting, two words which I'd heard plenty of times before. It shouldn't have elicited such an instant visceral reaction, but it did. Every nerve ending sparked like live wires in the rain. Warmth sluiced through my body as my heartbeat slowed, trying to draw the moment out as long as possible. Hi, darling. The only words that always made me feel like I was coming home. They urged me to run up to him and throw my arms around his neck, to bury my face in his chest and listen to his heartbeat as proof that he was alive and here. The compulsion was so strong, I actually took a tiny step forward before reason prevailed and I stopped myself. Instead, I swallowed past the growing lump in my throat and gestured at the cars lined up behind him. What's this? It took all my remaining willpower not to falter as Asher closed the distance between us. One step. Two steps. Three. On and on until he came to a halt less than 2 feet from me. Close enough for his scent to steal into my lungs and for his warmth to wrap around me like a blanket on a snowy winter night. A shiver ghosted across my skin.
I'll explain in a second.
Asher's voice pitched low enough for only my ears.
The last time we talked, you accused me of being too reckless and self-destructive. I didn't want to admit it then, but I've had time to reflect on my actions and the reasons behind them, and you were right.
A cloud passed overhead, throwing the sculpted angles of his face into shadow.
I didn't race despite the danger. I raced because of it. I loved the adrenaline. I loved the thrill of competing against death and winning. But recently, after a few talks with other close people in my life, I realized that wasn't the only reason.
Asher swallowed before continuing.
When he suspended me, Coach said I lacked discipline because something deeper was driving the impulsiveness that made me do stupid things like race against Bachi. It wasn't Holchester. It wasn't my pride or my desire to be great. It was something else, and I couldn't figure out what it was. Then my father showed up over the weekend.
His smile returned at my jerk of surprise.
Yeah, I was shocked too. But he showed up and we had a long talk. He mentioned my behavior after Teddy died and how it seemed like I had a death wish at the time. That was when it hit me. I never truly reconciled my guilt over Teddy's death. I was drawn to the danger of racing because I was trying to punish myself for what happened. Because part of me believed I should have been the one who died that night, not him.
His raw confession hit me with the force of a physical blow. Asher.
I'm not trying to make you feel sorry for me so you'll forgive me,
he said.
I know it's not an excuse for the way I've behaved, but it's the truth. Like I mentioned earlier, I've had a lot of time to reflect these past 2 weeks, and I realized something else. Whenever I thought about racing in the past, I got an adrenaline rush. I couldn't wait to get behind the wheel and see how far it would take me. But when I think about it now, the only thing I feel is regret. Even if I hadn't had the Teddy revelation, I would have felt the same way because racing is what lost me the one thing. The one person I care about most in the world. You.
Unshed tears sprang up in my eyes. I tried to speak, but it was impossible. Breathing was impossible. So I could only stand there, my eyes burning and my chest aching, while he slowly but systematically destroyed the defenses I'd built around my heart.
My whole life, I focused on football and winning. That was it,
Asher said, a touch of vulnerability softening his voice.
Then you came along and shattered every preconception I had of who I was and what I wanted. You made me reevaluate my life and want to be a better person, not just for you, but for me.
One of the tears escaped and scalded my cheek. I was dimly aware that Karina was still there, and his teammates, and whoever else happened to pass by at the moment. But I didn't care. At that moment, no one else mattered except us.
I can't fully reconcile the impact Teddy's death had on me overnight, but I think acknowledging it is a good first step. I don't want to be the guy who lets his past and his pride drive him to reckless decisions anymore.
Asher said.
I don't want to hurt myself or the people I care about for some short-lived high. Most of all, I don't want to ruin my chances of spending as many days with you as possible because I love you. More than football, more than racing, more than anything else in this universe. Pluto included.
A half-laugh, half-sob tore past my throat. More tears fell, but I didn't bother trying to stop them. Asher's acknowledgement of my silly Pluto rant over the summer and how much the little planet meant to me in this particular moment was so perfect, so him, that it made my heart squeeze.
I love you,
he repeated, his words thick with emotion.
I'm so fucking in love with you, darling, and the only reckless thing I want to do is explore how deep this rabbit hole goes with you. Together.
I laughed again, my own voice embarrassingly watery. It goes pretty deep, I imagine. He smiled.
I think so.
I love you. My body sang with those words, but before I could respond or acknowledge that sentiment with something more than tears, Asher stepped to the side.
However, I know words are cheap, so I asked the guys to come and give me a hand.
He gestured at the cars.
This is my entire car collection. I've bequeathed one vehicle to every member of the team.
My pulse drummed in my ears. I'd been so distracted by the team's appearance earlier that I hadn't paid attention to the cars themselves. The Porsche, the Bugatti, the Jaguar. All familiar sights from Asher's garage. All in someone else's hands now. Tell me you didn't. I breathed. That was millions of pounds in luxury vehicles. Money aside, Asher loved his cars. Even if he didn't race, that didn't mean he had to give up his collection.
I know we haven't met, but you're my favorite person ever.
The player standing next to the Porsche called out. I recognized him as Samson Agbo, one of the club's wingers.
I got this baby for free.
He slapped the shiny black hood with affection.
I got the Lambo!
Adil jangled his keys with a triumphant grin.
Thanks for breaking up with him, Scarlett. You should do it more often.
The other players laughed while Asher glared at him. I scanned the lineup until my eyes fell on Vincent, who leaned against the side of a vintage hunter green Jaguar convertible, Asher's favorite. The one he said Holchester defaced and that kick-started this whole mess. Whoever he'd hired to restore the paint had done an immaculate job because there was no trace of a single scratch. Vincent nodded when our gazes met. It was a small gesture, but I heard him loud and clear. I had his full blessing to rekindle my relationship with Asher if I wanted. Fresh emotion gushed into my throat. I faced Asher again, trying to piece my wayward thoughts into a coherent response. There were so many important things I wanted to say that they eluded my grasp altogether. So I fell back on the first thing that came to mind. If you gave away all your cars, what are you going to drive? His face broke out into a grin as he pointed out the car next to the Jaguar. The saloon was so bland and nondescript, it had blended into the surrounding grey cement until he directed my attention to it.
That one,
he said, sounding proud.
It was voted the safest car in the world this year. Four-wheel anti-lock braking system, forward collision warning system, front and rear head protection. Who needs to go from 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds when you have adaptive cruise control?
The wind carried my startled laugh through the car park. I have no idea what any of that means, but it sounds safe?
Very safe.
Asher's expression sobered. He turned his back to the team, shielding me from their eyes as his voice dipped again.
I wanted to show how serious I was about changing. I can't make up for what I did, but I can do everything in my power to ensure it never happens again. And I'm so fucking sorry for putting you through.
I cut him off with a kiss. In the absence of suitable words, I let my actions do the talking. My fingers delved into his hair, and after a split second of surprised hesitation, he kissed me back. His mouth melting against mine with such exquisite intimacy that I felt it in every molecule of my body. My mind hazed, and despite the October chill, warmth suffused my skin. Kissing Asha again after nearly 2 weeks of deprivation was like breaking through the surface of water after hours of icy submersion. Every sense crystallized with poignant detail. The sensual firmness of his lips, the hint of spice in his aftershave, the strength of his hand as it cupped my face. I barely heard the team's whistles and catcalls as I gave in to the sweet headiness of the moment. I couldn't guarantee that Asha wouldn't revert to his old habits down the road, but I trusted him. I saw the conviction in his eyes and heard it in his voice. Even if I hadn't, the fact he was willing to give up his beloved car collection told me everything I needed to know. Thus, if there was one thing I'd learned over the past 4 months, it was the importance of showing grace, both to myself and to others. We couldn't change the past. We could only shape the future. And I wanted a future with him. Together. I pulled back just enough for us to catch our breaths. Remember what you said earlier?
About the anti-lock braking system?
No. I released a tiny sigh of exasperation alongside my smile. You said you loved me. He slid his palm down to the nape of my neck. Its heat burned deliciously into my skin.
I said I love you more than anything else in the universe, including Pluto.
He corrected teasingly.
Don't dilute the poetry of my words.
I did that on purpose. I didn't want to sound repetitive because what I really want to say is that I love you too. My voice softened. More than anything else in the universe, including Pluto. I'd held back on telling him for so long that releasing the words into the world was its own kind of liberation. Asha's breath stuttered for half a beat. He hadn't pressured me to return the sentiment earlier, nor did he seem to expect it, and that only made me love him more. He wasn't perfect, but he was perfect for me. I missed you, I whispered. My tears had dried, but the emotion remained, swelling and rising behind my ribcage. So much. As upset as I'd been, I'd missed him so fiercely during every second of our separation that he'd haunted my dreams more nights than I cared to admit. Asha brushed his thumb over my cheek, his touch unbearably tender.
I missed you too, darling.
Just promise me one thing.
Anything.
Take the jag back from Vincent. He'll be insufferable with it. As much as I appreciated Asha's commitment to change, I wasn't going to make him give up his favourite car. It suited him. The saloon didn't. Asha laughed, his eyes glittering in the late afternoon sunlight.
Done.
Then he lowered his head and covered his mouth with mine. And everything, the cars, the people, the catcalls from his teammates, melted away.